On this week's episode, I talk at length about a great night I had seeing Jason Isbell play in St. Louis. I give a movie review and kind of a book review to Juliet Naked. I talk about the Venture Brothers and their Shirt of the Week Club. And I talk about this, that, and the other as it comes up, per usual. As always, I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Check-In. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Empty Checking, the show that... You know what, never mind, I'm just gonna jump right in. I saw Jason Isbell on Monday night with my friend Amanda. I've been looking forward to that show for months. It was great. It was potentially an all-time top five show. It was just a wonderful evening, a fantastic set. He was funny, he was charming, he played great songs, touched on most of my favorites, including some old Drive-By Truckers songs. His band was in top form. It was great hanging out with Amanda. I don't know where to start talking about this show. It was so good that I'm not even doing my standard intro to this. I'm just jumping right in and talking about it. Go to the blog and stuff like that, whatever, emptychecking.blogspot.com, links to stuff. But Isbell is just one of those artists that his music transcends fandom for me into something deeply personal and deeply moving, and a lot of his songs dating back to his time in the Drive-By Truckers have been there for me in hard moments and have gotten me through things and have been there for me to celebrate with. And seeing him live, this was my third time seeing him, and each time has been different, and each time has been equally moving, but in very, very different ways. This time was moving in a lot of ways, I think partially because of who I was there with, because Amanda's a huge fan of Jason Isbell's. By the way, I considered getting her on the phone and talking to her about the show on the podcast, but I know she's a busy person, so I'm not going to bother her at 10 o'clock on a weeknight. She's a huge fan of his. She's seen him, like, way more times than I have. Seeing someone of whom you're a huge fan with someone who is an equally, possibly even bigger fan than as you, that's always kind of a... kind of a cool experience. And hey, for the record, just to kind of say this, I'm aware that the internet is overflowing with assholes, so to get out in front of some of the assholes and stop any rumor or innuendo, because I don't deal in rumor and innuendo, Amanda and I have known each other for 20 years. We've done the math. It's 20 years this year, in fact. For the record, she's aging like wine. I'm aging like cheese. There's some mold. I'm about to speak of her very fondly and very affectionately. Yes, I'm speaking fondly and affectionately about a woman. No, you don't need to go check my Facebook relationship status. Don't create any uncomfortable conversations for the two of us if you don't have to, just so we have that out there. Moving on, Amanda is one of my favorite people to attend concerts with, and I'm super glad we went to this one together, because it was a very emotional experience that it was nice to have someone that you're very comfortable with there for. And I can't imagine another person I would have been quite that comfortable with. And you'll understand what I'm talking about, I think, a little bit more as I go through this segment. Anyway, we've both known each other through a bunch of hurdles and just the tough stuff of life and the great stuff of life, and we've known each other that long and watched each other grow and change and become the people that we are now. And we've remained close for that entire time, which is not something I can say for everybody that I met at that time, or before, or even after, frankly. We met at a church. We met in church, just struck up a friendship there. And I won't go into all of the details, but a lot of tough life stuff happened, and we were just we've just been there for each other forever. And we've got one of those great friendships that's going to last forever. Doesn't matter what happens. It's a, we're both that person to the other person. So it's kind of seeing a performer of whom you're a huge fan with someone else who is a huge fan, but you also have the shared life experience of both having gotten through some really crappy stuff together. That's a moving experience in and of itself. I'll say of Amanda, it's kind of, I said that we met because we went to the same church. It's kind of interesting that we've both, over time, like, when you're in a church, you kind of are on your best behavior. We're both Bible college graduates, so, you know, there's some tiptoeing that happens around just politeness and that kind of thing. We've known each other for 20 years. Finally, we're at the point where we can cuss in front of each other. I don't know. Like, we both, like, horrible things we've seen each other through, but only lately have we started, like, swearing. So I don't know what that says, but I've always loved a good swear word, even back 20 years ago. I don't know. I've been polite for 20 years. I guess just all bets are off now. Amanda, if you're listening, I like that we can cuss in front of each other now. That's really a relief. Amanda's great. She's one of my favorite people to hang out with, and it was cool to go to the show with her on a lot of levels. Also really beneficial to do so, because this was a really, really emotional, moving show, just to be in the audience for, and it was the kind of experience where you want someone that you're very close to there with you. Because I warned her up front, because Amanda lives in a different state. She drove in for this, which is awesome. We met for dinner before. We met over at Union Station here in St. Louis, which is currently undergoing a major renovation project to turn it into a giant aquarium that I forgot was ongoing, but it does mean that the parking lot was completely empty, and for the first time going to a concert in St. Louis, parking at Union Station, I didn't feel like it was a problem. Like, it wasn't, there was no traffic getting out of there. It was great. It was easy. Union Station can stay under construction for the foreseeable future as far as I'm concerned, if it means I've got a place to park and I can get out to go home as well. But we had dinner before the show at Maggie O'Brien's, a good Irish place down on Market Street, and headed over and missed most of the opening act. We saw, like, a song from the opening act, which was called Communist Daughter. They sounded fine, but we just, you know, we got there late. We hung out in the foyer, I suppose, for a while, and then went in and caught, like, the last song. And they seemed fine, but I missed most of their set. And we were just kind of chatting before the show, just sort of... Isabel has really deep lyrics and just really touches on some emotional subjects, and we were just kind of talking about that, and I flat out told her up front, look, if he does Relatively Easy, I am going to cry. And she was like, I get it. And we both just kind of went through naming the songs that one or both of us was going to probably cry during. He played all of them. I'll tell you this. I've been to a lot of concerts with a lot of people. Every now and again, there'll be an experience. Rufus Wainwright was one where I got teary-eyed during one of his songs. But every now and again, I'll have that. But it's kind of a rarity, and it's usually in a way that I sort of look away from the person I'm with and just sort of, you know, try to appear tough and disinterested or something. In this particular case, I had warned her in advance. He started playing Relatively Easy. She looked over at me at that point and said, are you going to be okay? And I said, nope. And I wasn't, because that second verse, the second verse of that song, if you're unfamiliar with it, is a verse about suicide, and is a verse about someone committing suicide, and how the voice of the song, presumably Jason Isbell, chooses to remember him in a good way, chooses to remember his best qualities rather than how he went out. For a variety of personal reasons that you'll fully understand if you've ever listened to my solo discography, that's a hard subject for me. It's difficult to discuss even in this context where I'm alone and I can edit out long pauses to catch my breath. It's a touchy subject, and it's a very emotional subject for me to deal with. And every time I hear that verse in that song, I just kind of lose it. And, like I said, in most contexts, I would, you know, maybe just kind of bite the lower lip and look away for a moment. But, in this case, I was just like, I'm just gonna cry. And I did. And, Amanda was, you know, just kind of there and just kind of was, you know, it got me through that. And we just, there were moments like that in the show. It was a very emotional show, and it was good to have a friend of 20 years that you can cry in front of there with you. Just a beautiful show, a really moving show. In fact, I almost lost it on the very first song, which was Go It Alone, that I forgot that that song means something to me until he started playing it. Because I've been past week or so listening to just his more recent material that I haven't seen him do, because I last saw him on the Southeastern tour, which is a couple records back now. So I've been listening to the newer stuff, and I just kind of forgot about Go It Alone. And, like, immediately that kind of got me. Like, I was like, oh god, I'm in trouble tonight. And, and he just tore through a bunch of my favorite stuff, and a bunch of her favorite stuff. She had warned me in advance that she tears up on the song Children of Children, for reasons that I understand that I won't go into detail about. I'm not... This show isn't to, you know, tell anybody else's life story that they may or may not want told on it. But when she told me that, I was like, yeah, I could see how that one would mean a lot to you. It actually kind of reminds me of you. So he did that, of course, which was, I believe, the last song before the encore, if memory serves. And I like that song. I like Children of Children. But the version he did in St. Louis on Monday night, holy shit. My jaw was just dropped by the end of that song. He kicked into the outro solo, and it was just... It's a very moving song anyway, but That was a moment during that show where I thought he was going to play so well that we would all just stop existing, and that would have been fine. It was a transcendent moment that I can't explain. You had to be there. It was incredible. It was the kind of show where for most of the night, everybody was sitting down. He kicked into that solo, got a little bit into it, and the crowd, with no prompting, just everybody was up on their feet. You don't get to experience that much. A crowd just deciding as one, yep, this is serious now. And, that song went from being a song I like to now one of my favorite songs of his. That was just a very moving thing. And did all of his stuff that moves me a lot. He did the Drive-By Truckers song Goddamn Lonely Love, which is one of the first Jason Isbell songs I really was drawn to and really kind of got. And he did that, and that was wonderful to hear. And he touched on a couple of DBT songs. He did Never Gonna Change, Goddamn Lonely Love, and I think something else. He didn't do Outfit, for those who expect him to do Outfit. He didn't need to. He did his song Elephant, which is about someone dying of cancer, and they got to the end of that song, and I turned to Amanda and said, boy, it almost feels weird to clap after that song, because it's just really weighty. He did the song Cover Me Up, which was actually turned into a funny moment, Because Isbell is one of those guys who does not care for being recorded on someone's cell phone. He doesn't want people to watch the show through their cell phone. He wants people to watch the show. Doesn't want to be bootlegged. Doesn't want to be, you know, doesn't want people sitting there taking video of him the whole night. And especially on the more intimate moments like that. And earlier in the show, he was doing a different song. I don't remember what. My memory's a little bit fuzzy of exactly when this was. But he was doing a different song, and it was kind of a quieter one. And, you know, kind of looking around, you could see the phones up, people recording and stuff. And just the middle of the song, he just says, "Hey Siri, stop recording." Which was insanely funny. Because that screwed up anybody who had an iPhone that was trying to record the show. That made me so happy. And he had another moment like that during Cover Me Up, which is a beautiful song that's about his relationship with his wife, Amanda Shires, a great performer of her own right. It's a deeply moving song. It's a deeply personal song for him. He dedicated it to his wife. She wasn't there that night. She's off doing her own tour. But he dedicated it to Amanda Shires and starts singing it and gets partway into the first verse and just says, "Excuse me, can you stop recording me, please?" And singles out the person he was talking to and just kind of informed them of why they should stop recording him. And he said he was going to restart the song, and he did, and he did a great version of it. And it was kind of perfect because I agree with him on that point. Now, I don't mind if someone wants to take 10, 20 seconds of video just to say, "Hey, look where I am," and just toss it on Facebook. That's fine, but that's not what was happening in those two situations. You had people just filming the entire song, bootlegging the song. It's a practice I don't support. It's a practice I don't even really understand. I get it if you want to just, hey, here's 10, 20, 30 seconds for just for the sake of it, for bragging rights, you know. That's fine. I get it. I've done it. But I don't care for someone just sitting there watching the show through their phone and forcing the people behind them to do likewise. So I loved that Isbell did that. He did it a funny way once, and he did it a very strong, purposeful way the next time, and it was well done. I enjoyed that. But he played his fun stuff too. He did Super 8, you know, Don't Want to Die in a Super 8 Motel. He did Super 8. He did Cumberland Gap. He did the fun stuff too. But I'm gonna remember that specific experience with relatively easy for a very long time. That was a poignant moment for me that marked one of the nicest nights I've had in a very long time. I enjoyed that night, enjoyed that show in a way that I often don't allow myself to enjoy a night and a show. And as you know, again, part the company, but also just Isbell's music is the kind of music that you create a life experience around. And what an experience! What an experience Monday night was. That was a good one. That night meant a lot to me. So I doubt that Jason Isbell will ever hear it, but I owe him my sincere thanks. I tweeted it to him as well. And Amanda, if you ever listen to this, I know you don't have a lot of time for podcasts, but if you happen to listen to this one, thanks again for going to that. That was a lot of fun. It was great to see you. And we should do more of that, because that was sincerely one of my top five all-time concert experiences. Boy, that'd be a heck of a podcast episode, wouldn't it? Top five concert experiences with Derek. I mean, you'd have The Who in 89. That kind of changed my life. You'd have this. That'd be an interesting list. Maybe we'll do that one of these days. But I don't know. I wanted to get my thoughts down on Isbell. I bought a t-shirt. I'll put that on the blog over at emptychecking.blogspot.com. He's such a great songwriter and such a great guitar player. If you're wondering where the guitarists went, if you're wondering where the, you know, where are the Jimmy Pages, where are the Eddie Van Halens, where, you know, whoever, you know, where's this generation's that guy? You need to be looking at the alt country scene, the country scene, the blues scene. That's where the guitar players are these days. Zizbel is just a phenomenal guitarist and has found the way to get his soul to shine through the technique, and the technique is great, but the soul is even greater. And I mean, that dude, if he doesn't leave it all on the stage, then I don't know where he's keeping it, you know, because we walked out of the theater last night and both just talked about being emotionally drained. And and thank God Amanda remembered to take a selfie so that, you know, there's some record of us having been there. So we've got a selfie of us kind of standing there. It was an emotionally exhausting show, but it was in the best possible ways. I loved that experience so much, I can't even explain it to you. It was, I've been waiting for this show for months and months, and I've been waiting to hang out with Amanda for months and months, and just absolutely worth every moment of the wait. That might not be a top five concert night, that might be a top five night. That was really a great experience. I could go on. You probably are tired of hearing me go on this long. Thanks for listening to that. I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of music, some of my stuff, which you can get on derekbrink.bandcamp.com for absolutely free. Just enter zero as your purchase price. I don't collect your email, all that stuff that I normally say. I hope I never stop being grateful for experiences like that show and that night, because that was the kind of thing that gets you through to the next one. So thanks, Jason Isbell. Thanks to his band, the 400 Unit. Thanks, Amanda. Thanks to the Stifle Theater for putting it on. And thanks to all of you for letting me talk about it for a little while, because it was great that night, and it's kind of great to relive it by talking about it, too. Let's play some music. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit less emotionally about a couple of things. Thanks for letting me kind of just barrel through that for a while. We'll play some music and we'll come back and talk about something else.
I collect short stories of lost loves and past glories. Some of them are too long to pass the time.
Alright, the stuff I should have said up front is check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. It's on podcast apps such as iTunes and CastBox and other things. Just start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink and you'll find us. I will never be on Spotify. Never Spotify. That's not even my choice. I would have to apply and there's no way they would accept me. If you want to know more about me, derekbrink.com is the place to go. If you like the music that you hear throughout the show and would like to take it home with you for the low, low price of absolutely free, go on over to derekbrink.bandcamp.com, and on anything you want, just put in $0 as your purchase price. You can have it for free. I don't even collect your email address, even if they ask you to put one in. I keep no record of that, so download away. If you want to give me a couple of bucks, you can. That's nice of you. I appreciate it. But I won't even know if you took it for free. So just rob me blind, please. I saw a movie on Sunday with my dad. He had actually already seen it, but from what I understand, wasn't able to fully enjoy it the night that he saw it because of some volume issues and stuff like that. So he was up for seeing it again, and it was one that I really wanted to see because I read the book previously a few years back and wanted to see what they were doing with the movie. Saw Juliet Naked, which is not as filthy as it sounds. It's I'll explain in a minute. It is based on a book by Nick Hornby. Nick Hornby, of course, is the author of High Fidelity, is his best known work probably. The John Cusack movie came out of that with Jack Black before he was fully Jack Black. Other books he's written, A Long Way Down, Funny Girl. About a Boy, Fever Pitch, which is a soccer thing that's mostly true, I think. I haven't actually read that one. But I've read all of his other stuff. Nick Hornby's one of my favorite authors, with the exception of I didn't read Fever Pitch. He's one of my favorite authors, and Juliet Naked spoke to me in a lot of ways when I read it a few years back. In fact, there's a song in my solo career that I lifted the title from the book. You and Your Perfect Life is a song that's said to have been written by one of the central characters in the book Juliet Naked, but there's no information revealed about that song. There's just a title there, and I liked the title, and I took it, and I've been copping to that since I released the song, so that's not like some weird secret or anything. It's always been meant as tribute, so nobody jump on me for that. I absolutely own that. Always have, always will. Juliet Naked is the story of a reclusive rock star who more or less comes back into prominence because of some doings transpiring on a internet site run by a super fan, and there are some demos that are released of his most famous album, Juliet. And the demos are called Juliet Naked because they're the demo versions of those songs. They're not the fully treated, fully dressed versions of the songs. They're the raw demos. A lot like how several years back the Beatles released Let It Be Naked. It's that's the meaning of the book title. It's don't assume that it's like porn or something. It's one of those titles that when you understand it makes a lot of sense, but it may look slightly odd on a marquee. In fact, a friend of mine told me that at the Tivoli here in town, I didn't see it. I didn't notice it on their marquee. I did see the movie at the Tivoli, but I didn't notice that they had written this. Apparently on their marquee, they wrote, "There's no one named Juliet and nobody's naked. I don't understand." So maybe not the best title for marketing purposes, but it makes a lot of sense once you understand that, and it is very central to the story of the book and movie. Basically, there's a guy who runs a webpage devoted to this famous rock star who had a great album called Juliet, who then more or less disappeared, just dropped off the face of the earth, and everyone who remained a fan of his was wondering what happened to him. There's this whole mythos that's built up around him of different stories of where he could have ended up and what may have happened to him and what he might be doing now and so on and so on and so on. The guy who runs the website or forum or what have you is on the outs with his girlfriend, who is a little bit tired of his obsession, and live-in girlfriend, mind you, who's tired of his obsession and is getting frustrated with their relationship and her station in life in general. In many ways, it's a story of people trying to figure out what they have left after a lot of wasted years. And that's the romance side of it. The sort of story between the two of them is them drifting apart and realizing how much time they'd wasted just trying to get through it, I guess. And especially her, just realizing how much time she'd wasted on a guy who didn't want the same things that she wanted, who really only wanted to obsess over his, you know, rock star fandom. And that sounds familiar to some of us. She hears the demos, the Juliet Naked record, before her boyfriend. It was sent to their flat, their English. It was sent to their flat, and it was addressed to him. She opened the mail and listened to it before he did, and it sparks a fight, and they briefly make up, and there's more fighting. And she goes on to the forum that her boyfriend runs and writes a negative review of Juliet Naked, and because she didn't like it. She thought it was just a clear cash grab and that kind of thing. And the guy who, the rock star who has disappeared, apparently reads said forum, saw her post and contacted her directly to say, yeah, you're right, it's garbage. And they strike up a friendship, they strike up a romance, end up together, all that stuff. The boyfriend wanders off into a different relationship as well. It's a much better story than the way I'm telling it. But it's one of those stories where you've heard this story a million times, but this time there's a rock star in it. Basically. But that doesn't mean that you can't draw fresh water from an old well. You know, it's an old story, but it's the old stories are the best ones. We're still telling the hero's journey all these years later, you know. And I loved the book at the time that I read it. It was one of those books I just devoured and then spoke of evangelically. And I was very excited to hear that they were making a movie and that the movie starred in part Chris O'Dowd, who is known perhaps best for his role on the IT Crowd. He was great in it, as was the rest of the cast. I'm not that familiar with Rose Byrne, who played the female lead, but she was great. I really liked her. She was very likable and very, very warm and very, very personable through the camera. I liked her quite a bit. Surprise of the film for me is that the rock star character, the name of the rock star is Tucker Crowe, by the way, I don't know why I haven't said it, the Tucker Crowe character was played by Ethan Hawke, who I've apparently been underappreciating for quite some time, because I don't know when it happened, because I haven't followed his career, but Ethan Hawke has become a damn good actor, and I really enjoyed watching him. I mean, we're probably the thing that people know him from is like Boyhood or Training Day. I think he was in Dead Poets Society. He's just one of those guys that he's not a go-to touchstone for me of great actors of his generation. I've been overlooking Ethan Hawke. Somewhere along the line, that guy got chops, man. He makes a lot of movies that I'm not that interested in seeing. That's not really his fault. You make the scripts that they give you, or at least the ones you agree to do. But I this is the first time I've seen him in anything in a very long time, and he was great. I need to give Ethan Hawke a better chance than I've given him over time. He was fantastic in that. The movie itself is what it is. It's very charming. It's got a fairly light feel to it. It's got a pretty good flow to it. It's a comedy. I actually think the laughs in the movie were a little bit easier of laughs than they were in the book, because the book tries to incorporate some of those same jokes, but some jokes read better out loud, you know, and the movie helped with that. The movie felt a lot more like a comedy than the book did. The book almost felt like a semi-tragedy to me, even though it wasn't supposed to be that. It was supposed to be kind of a lighthearted, comedic, you know, thing, which is most of what Hornby does. But it might have been the mood I was in at the time that I was reading it, but the book had an emotional resonance to me that is not the same in the movie. The movie still certainly did have an emotional resonance with me, but there were very easy laughs in the movie. I had a good time kind of smiling and laughing along. It was a well-told story. Like I've said, this is a story we've all heard a million times, but a million and one can still be entertaining. You ever watch an I Love Lucy rerun? Probably. That's, you know... You can laugh at something and you can enjoy something that you're already kind of familiar with. And Juliet Naked is a very normally structured story, but it's that I think helps it in a lot of ways. It helps it that it's a little bit light and you can just go in and just sort of enjoy it. And there's this musical thing at the center of it that is just barely hiding there are some great songs. I'll tell you this. I almost immediately downloaded the soundtrack when I got home, because one of the things about reading that book was that I was at the end of it left wanting to hear the Juliet album, which doesn't exist. No one's ever done the Juliet album. So when they did this movie, they recorded some songs that would be more or less on the Juliet album, and I liked what I was hearing in the movie, and I really appreciated the Tucker Crowe piano and vocal only version of Waterloo Sunset by the Kinks. Thank you very much, Ethan Hawke, who's a much better singer than I would have imagined. I even said that to Amanda at the Jason Isbell show. I said, the problem here is I've had the Kinks' Waterloo Sunset stuck in my head for 2 days and I don't think he's gonna play it. But instead he played stuff that made me cry. Yeah, I downloaded the soundtrack to Juliet Naked, and there are some really good songs on that soundtrack that no one's ever going to hear. No one's going to download that except for me and the handful of Hornby fans who had the same experience with it that I did. There's some good stuff in there, including Ethan Hawke's solo rendition of Waterloo Sunset, and it's a really beautifully put together soundtrack. I liked this movie a lot. If I were the kind of guy who bought movie posters, I'd probably buy this movie poster. Put it in a frame, hang it up next to a movie poster of High Fidelity. They belong together. That's probably a very good comparison, in fact. I mean, both the same author, at the time that the book was out, people were comparing Juliet Naked to High Fidelity. But people kind of compare everything Hornby does to High Fidelity, so that's whatever. But the movies even have a similar tone to them in a lot of ways. And you almost wanted John Cusack to play Tucker Crow, but maybe he wasn't available. I don't know. Although I now can't imagine anybody other than Ethan Hawke playing Tucker Crow. Incidentally, Ethan Hawke, Tucker Crow, in some ways similarly structured names. Crow is spelled C-R-O-W-E. Hawk is spelled H-A-W-K-E. They're both birds. I've been struggling to get the names right this entire segment. But I enjoyed the movie quite a bit, is ultimately what I'm getting at. And had a lot of fun with it. I found it slightly distracting that the kid that's in the movie for most of it, he did a great job. I'm in no way about to criticize the kid. He did a great job. I really liked his performance. It was they did a good job with the kid dynamic in the story. But I was very distracted in that the kid that they had playing the kid looked a lot like Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. Looked a lot like that guy. And but it was distracting because the kid in the movie was a good 3 to 5 years too young to be Finn Wolfhard. Finn Wolfhard is a great actor. I got nothing against him, but it was just distracting that, like, I was just the whole movie thinking, is that Finn Wolfhard? If so, when did they film this? You know, I was wrong. It wasn't him. So I was distracted by that, but that's in no way the movie's fault. That's because my brain won't let me focus on anything for too long without asking a question. That's the way I was raised. It's been to my benefit most of the time. Good movie. I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it's not going to win any Oscars. I don't think it's trying to win any Oscars. I think it's just trying to entertain the people that it was aimed at, and I'm one of those people, and it entertained me. So if you're a guy like me, check out Juliet Naked. It's a good watch. It's got people in it that are good actors. It's got a good soundtrack. It's shot well, I guess. There were cameras used. They were pointed at things, and you could tell what those things were. That's really all I ask out of a movie. But there are probably people out there who are way more into cinematography than I am that have thoughts on it. But Juliet Naked made me appreciate it from the moment that I got in there. It was engaging. It had a good cast. It had a good soundtrack. I really liked it. I'm gonna need the Blu-ray. I already have the soundtrack. So it's check it out if you got an hour and a half to kill one of these days, and you'll probably have a good time with it if you're a guy like me who spends most of his time thinking about music and movies and stuff. It's a movie for guys like us, or ladies like us. Some of you may be women. I have a feeling that a strong majority of my listeners are probably male, but I don't want to discount any of the women out there. I apologize if I have. Juliet Naked, good movie, good book. If you were to ask me which was better, the book or the movie, they're each their own thing. There's some deviation in how the movie presented aspects of the book. There's some added, some taken away. That's just part of making a movie out of something that never bothers me that much. Like, I'm not the kind of guy who's bothered by the fact that Tom Bombadil isn't in the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm not the kind of guy that's bothered by the stuff that was added to the Hobbit movies. Those are just quick, easy touchstones. It doesn't bother me when people do that. I just watch the movie for what it is, and if the movie entertained me, then I think it was a good movie. I don't, you know, as long as it's got some structural similarity to the book that it's referencing, I'm pretty much fine with it. And Juliet Naked had a lot more in common with the book than the Lord of the Rings did. So, you know, I look at them both as their own thing. Juliet Naked is one of my favorite Hornby books. It's one of my favorite books, probably. And it was also a really good movie. So I'm not going to say which one was better. They both had aspects the other didn't. I'll say that I prefer how the book ended slightly to how the movie ended. I won't do any spoilers just in case, but I guess I've already done some spoilers. I gave you pretty much the whole plot, but I won't go any further into the exact ending, but I will say I preferred the book ending, but that's so, you know, that doesn't change whether or not it was a good movie. It was a good movie. It was a good book. So read it and then watch it, or watch it and then read it, or read it while watching it. That seems like it would be counterproductive, but you could give it a shot. Maybe. I like them both, and I think you should too, I guess. So that's my thoughts on Juliet Naked. Yeah, there you go. Juliet Naked. Good movie. I've just been repeating myself for the last couple of minutes, so let's move on.
It's been too long. You've changed your hair, haven't you? Still hanging out with the same crowd. Chasing after the same truth.
Let's do one quick TV thing. I've continued watching The Venture Brothers, the new series of The Venture Brothers. It's been entertaining. I don't think any of the rest of the season, except for maybe the final couple episodes, because they tend to do that, but I don't think most of the season is going to live up to the opening of the season, because the opening three episodes were just incredible. But I've been consistently entertained by the Venture Brothers shows. This last week was really funny, and I enjoyed the kind of Guild of Calamitous Intent mentorship program, which is called Big Villain. Big Villain. It's just a more experienced villain mentoring a less experienced villain in a mentoring program. The concept of that just makes me laugh. I like that a lot. It's been a fun season. I've been really enjoying the season. I've also been really enjoying being in the Shirt of the Week club, because I signed up for all of the shirts this time around. I'm getting a shirt every episode. What it is they're doing a t-shirt related to each week's episode, and if you're in the club, they send you out a new shirt that week. And we're up to week six, and week six is a shirt for the Big Villain program that I just talked about, and I'm looking forward to wearing that around. I really like the shirts that I've been getting. They mean nothing to anyone who hasn't watched the show, but I like them a lot, and I'll put some pictures of them on the blog over at emptychecking.blogspot.com. They're up to, yeah, they're putting week six out right now. I've received three of the six shirts. They're shipping the fourth. I actually just got a shipping notice while I was recording this show that the week four shirt shipped. I'll tell you this, they shipped the weeks one and two shirts in the same envelope. They got here on Friday of last week. And then they shipped the week three shirt in a new envelope, and it got here on Monday of this week. And now there's another one in the mail that'll probably get here by the end of this next week. They are doing it right. In the same way that I've complained about the Star Trek Mission Crate thing from Loot Crate being a terrible example of fan service, the Venture Brothers crew knows what they are doing. They are treating their fans right, and I could not be happier with the product that I'm getting. These are good-looking shirts. They're good quality shirts. They fit good. I'll show them off on the blog. It's hard to explain them because you kind of have to have seen the episodes, but I'm enjoying them. They're making me smile, and it's the kind of fan service that you normally just don't find from the makers of a product, and I love the kind of attention to the attention to their own garbage that Doc and Jackson give, and it's a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying the season. I'm enjoying the t-shirts. I've been a fan of this show for as long as it's been on, and it's just cool that it's still going and that they're doing stuff like this for guys like me who have been hangers-on this long. So I just wanted to praise the good folks at the Venture Brothers for writing a great show and for putting out great merchandise that's only available for limited times. If you're interested in seeing some of these shirts, I promise this isn't dirty, it's a type of bird. Go over to titmousestuff.com, spelled like you think it would be, titmousestuff.com, and you can see kind of what they're putting out. They've got the week 6 shirt up right now, that'll be through Sunday when the new episode airs, and they'll put up the week 7 shirt. It's just a lot of fun for guys like me who love this kind of crap. So I just wanted to sing their praises for a minute. Doc and Jackson work really hard on this show for people like me, and I appreciate it. I like when a creator likes doing stuff like this and clearly enjoys their job as much as those guys do, and appreciates their fans as much as those guys do. It's reciprocal. We appreciate them back. So just wanted to say that. I've been enjoying that. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah, Venture Brothers, go Team Venture is how I'll end this part.
Thought it was a keeper, nice hair, nice smile, and the passion of a preacher who prayed for you. You thought that you had found yourself the man of your dreams. The prayer's just another way of stating your opinion, thinking out loud with them.
I wonder if I'd get a copyright strike and someone would pull down my episode if I just sat here and sang Waterloo Sunset, because it's just still in my head. Although so is Children of Children by Isbell, so you might get a weird, weird, not at all fitting together mashup. This was a cathartic episode for me. Thanks for letting me do that. I realized last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, I took last week off, but I realized two weeks ago, I failed to mention that Aretha Franklin died on the show. That's a massive oversight. I apologize for that. I will tell the absolute truth. I'm not the world's biggest Aretha Franklin fan. I absolutely respect her, though. I'm not saying I'm not the world's biggest fan because I am in any way trying to downplay her. I'm just saying that I'm not going to claim to be an authority on Aretha Franklin. I like what I know, but I'm underinformed. That said, Aretha Franklin got to walk around for all of the years of her life knowing that she had one of the most powerful voices in the world just stashed away that she could break out at any time, and that is one hell of a cool life to lead. And she was one of those singers that for a long time I didn't appreciate her. For a long time I didn't respect Aretha Franklin. Because she was the kind of performer that didn't sing something the same way twice, because that's not how she felt the music, which I understand now, but when I was younger, I didn't understand. Like, if you watch her scene in Blues Brothers when she's singing, there are times where she's so far off of the sync that it's unpleasant to watch. She is nowhere near the recording of her own voice, and that kind of thing would drive me nuts when I was a kid, because so much of what I was being trained to do as a young musician was to be able to do things the same way. I was in choirs and stuff, and it was about precision, and it was about getting things to a consistently similar performance each time, and to be razor sharp and hit your beats at exactly the same way at exactly the same time, and be there was a lot of perfectionism that went into my training The thing that nobody tells you is, after you're done with that training, all of that goes out the window and is crap, and you start singing rock and roll, and you just have to feel it, and all the training is great to have, but you're not gonna apply it in your rock band, and you're not gonna apply it if you're a black soul singer. For damn sure not gonna apply it if you're a black soul singer, because that is not what that type of music is about. And I understand that now as an adult. I appreciate that now as an adult. For a very long time, I didn't appreciate that, and I didn't give Aretha Franklin her due. In fact, I kind of avoided her. I regret that now. I've regretted that for several years, because now I understand. Aretha didn't sing it the same way twice, not because she couldn't, but because that wasn't what was in her heart. Aretha Franklin and performers like her are about expressing what's inside of them, getting what's inside of them out, and that isn't always perfect, and it isn't always clean, and it isn't always on the same meter, and it isn't always on the same beat, and sometimes you hit a bum note, but you own it, you keep singing it, and you bend it until it's right. Aretha Franklin was the Jimi Hendrix of singers. Jimi Hendrix cannot be called the world's most precise guitar player, but nobody played guitar like Jimi Hendrix. He was sloppy as hell sometimes, but the things that he did with that instrument, the guitar was never the same after Jimi Hendrix picked it up, and the human voice was never the same after Aretha Franklin opened her mouth. So I repent of my teenaged and probably early 20s self, thinking that I knew more about music than Aretha Franklin. Everybody thinks they know everything when they're young. I repent. I throw myself upon the mercies of the music gods. Aretha Franklin is a devastating loss to anyone who has ever sung anything. And the only word that is befitting to speak when you speak of Aretha Franklin is the word respect. So there, I've set the record straight, I've recorded it, it's saved for all of time on the internet, or at least until the next fad. Aretha Franklin, may she rest in peace. Also, Burt Reynolds passed away recently, may he rest in peace as well. As I've been watching the Venture Brothers, they keep referencing Sharky's Machine this season, so I've been thinking about Sharky's Machine a lot. And, of course, Cannonball Run. People talk about Boogie Nights, which I don't think I've ever seen all of, like, in a row. I may have seen all of it, I'm not sure. I haven't seen all of it. Like, I haven't sat down and watched Boogie Nights. But I may have seen all of it by now in one context or another. But that's, people talk about it. That's probably not the movie I would want as my legacy if I were, a Burt Reynolds. But it seems like everybody who worked with him had a great story about working with Burt Reynolds, and you can't say that about everybody in Hollywood. So I've certainly appreciated a lot of Burt Reynolds stuff in my time. I mean, Cannonball Run, that stuff, yes. One of my favorite gems that you probably haven't seen is a movie called Hooper, where Reynolds plays a stunt driver who's on his way out of the business because there's a younger, cooler stunt driver coming up. And it also co-stars the guy that played Roscoe Coltrane from The Dukes of Hazzard. It's exactly what you think it is, and it's worth every minute of your time, and also worth absolutely none of it. It's just, Hooper is one of those movies that I don't even remember how that came into my life. It must have been through my brother. He must have stumbled upon it. That seems like the kind of movie that he'd stumble upon and then force me to watch when he was in his 20s or something. But I have fond memories of Hooper, and you may not have seen that one, but it's an undiscovered or an underappreciated, I guess, gem from Burt Reynolds' career. Burt Reynolds got a nice, long, full career and a nice, long, full life, but I hope he is also resting in peace. That's probably a really weird new kids table for the incoming class with Aretha Franklin and Burt Reynolds sitting at it, along with John McCain. Although I would like to think that Teddy Kennedy welcomed all of them for some reason. That's the show. that's how we'll go out. We'll go out with Ted Kennedy welcoming John McCain, Aretha Franklin, and Burt Reynolds to famous person heaven, or whatever. I don't know how that works. Thanks a lot for letting me do this. Thanks a lot for tuning in as though it's radio. Thanks a lot for clicking over to this and sticking with me for the hour. No wrestling this week. Not going to talk wrestling this week. I'm actually behind on my wrestling watching. I watched most of SmackDown, just was doing other stuff and not paying full attention. A couple things I probably need to go back and look at again. I haven't watched any of Raw because I was watching one of the best shows I've ever been to, by God. And there's a WWE pay-per-view coming up this weekend. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. Until that time, thanks a lot for letting me do this. Thanks a lot for being you. In case I didn't say it up front, I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you've been listening to Empty Checking. Thanks, I enjoyed doing this one, and as always, check us out next time. No joke this week.